Coming up on Digital Music Trends, we talk about Gracenote's new developer program, the impact of digital sales and technology on charts, the dispute between YouTube and Gamer and its repercussions, music streaming services in Germany, and much more. This is Digital Music Trends, episode 121, recorded on the 20th of February 2013. So hello everyone and welcome to DMT, the weekly show covering the latest news in the digital music world. Digital Music Trends is available as both audio and video on iTunes, most podcatchers, SoundCloud, YouTube, Mixcloud, Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. So this week on the show I'm very happy to welcome a fantastic panel, which for the first time is country specific, as all of this week's guests are from Germany. So from Mannheim we have Ryan Rauscher, project manager at SMIX Labs, which is the competence center for the digital music business at the Pop Academy in Mannheim. So hi Ryan, and thanks for being on the show. How's it going?
Hey, everything good. As I told you just before, we have a lot of work to be done for the next semester and preparing our future music camp. But all going well right now, and I'm looking forward to the next month.
Great. And then we have from Berlin, Barbara Halama, who is a freelancer as online project manager with a music focus on halama.org and has extensive experience in the music tech space, including a few years spent as editorial chief at iTunes Germany. So hi, Barbara, and thanks for joining the show.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Great. And from Ilmenau, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, we have Stefan Holly, who is now head of media management and delivery at Fraunhofer IDT. And he spent close to 4 years at personalized internet radio service Opio as CTO. So hi, Stefan, and hope all's going well.
Yeah. Hello to everybody. Nice to be here. And as I told you already, it's a little bit too cold, maybe, but yeah. Trying to set my footprint here at Fraunhofer. I'm here for now some weeks. Things starting quite quickly.
Yeah, I can't wait to escape the cold of London and go to South by in a couple of weeks. That's going to be fun.
Definitely. Yeah. So we will see us there.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week we're going to start the show by talking about the usual music tech news, but it was quite a slow news week, which is actually good because the second part is going to be devoted to talking about the digital music market in Germany, which I'm very excited about. So let's start with the first story of the week, which is about Gracenote. So Gracenote announced the launch of its new developer program last week. This will open up the company's APIs and SDKs to third-party developers fully. And it will be free on a non-commercial basis. So it will allow developers to experiment and build on top of the company's platforms to create some cool new stuff. One of the interesting things about this development is that they also opened up their Music ID service, which is an audio fingerprinting technology that basically allows anybody to find a track just by pointing their phone to it, much like Shazam and SoundHound. But the cool thing is that it's going to be integrated in third-party applications. Music ID already powers the recognition feature in applications such as sound tracking and Music Match. But this is going to be able to bring the Music ID service to a lot more developers and applications. So Gracenote enters a field that is has so far been dominated by the Echo Nest, which is an interesting thing because, of course, the Echo Nest has been working on this for many years and supporting the developers community. So first of all, what do you guys make of Gracenote's entry into this brave new world of open APIs and SDKs? Stefan, what's your take on this story?
Yeah, I think it's quite logical that they all open up this kind of technology also to other people because they are a direct competition to Echo Nest.
Yeah.
And they have announced this last year in autumn together with some other new features according to their automotive SDK, which they will have, or they will release soon as well. And we know Gracenote, of course, also for a long time here at Fraunhofer because some developers are working still at Gracenote, which starting their career here at Fraunhofer, and we are also doing development together in certain pieces of technology.
Oh, great.
And yeah, but also a little bit of competition because we have different views of in certain details of technologies as well. So, but Echonest is also in part, to, when it comes to recommendation, also a direct competitor to Fraunhofer here as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, but we are not that commercially available.
Oriented.
We are going to cooperate with partners and not only putting on products, because this is not the aim of Fraunhofer in principle. So
sure.
Yes, it was a very logical step.
Absolutely.
Let's see if developers more using Echonest in the future or Phrasenote. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I assume that will also depend on what the commercial terms are once you do want to bring the
exactly.
app into the market. So Ryan, what's your feeling about Grace Note entering this market? Of course, you know, at the Future Music Camp, there's you know, a few developers as well as musicians and artists and a lot of startups. What's your take on a big company like that, which is backed by Sony, of course, entering the market?
Well, I do agree that Grace Note's move was to be expected. Actually, if you look at the success that the Echonest has had in the past few years. And I personally think it's interesting for two reasons. One is I haven't seen a lot of projects or German companies doing cooperations with the Echonest until now. So maybe because Grace Note is better known in Germany and a more established player, that might bring up some interesting ideas.
Yeah.
For example, in, you know, with traditional radio stations like Clear Channel, together with the Echonest in the States. The second reason why I think it's very interesting is for research purposes, because we do some research projects with our students and would like to work together with programmers, developers, and students from universities. So I think that's a great chance to test, you know, new use cases, business cases, and also for hackers, for developers, as well as for students to try out two different databases and concepts for analyzing data or distribution things and stuff, and to compare what works better. I think that's very interesting. So I do really think it's very positive.
Great. Awesome. And Barbara, of course, Grace Note was built on the backbone of CDBB, which was you know, the company that was really powering the metadata side of iTunes for a long time, and still is. So what do you make of this you know, huge amount of metadata that is now available for developers to play with?
I also agree. It only can be a good thing if, I mean, sharing means caring. So the more people are working on it, the better could be the product. And yeah, I hope, I'm a really big fan of Shazam since a long time already. And I'm wondering when it's really starting to be popular.
Yeah.
We have in Germany the first ad for with Shazam. I think it's a car company.
Yeah.
And but the problem is that when you recognize, use your Shazam now, then the ad is over already.
Yeah.
So we have started now. Let's see what will happen. I am using it very often. So when I'm DJing and someone else is playing a track which I like, I'm going immediately there and I have it.
Yeah.
So Shazam is great, and the technology behind it is fantastic. So the more it's out, the better for us.
Yeah, and it's interesting, actually. Stefan, what do you reckon about the possibility of Shazam, actually, and SoundHound, which is another company that works on music recognition, actually being, in a way, worried about this new entry of Grace Note? Because, of course, their technology at the moment is available only within their apps, as far as I'm aware, whilst Grace Note is going to be allowing third-party developers, and already does with Music's Match, for example, to integrate that recognition within their own application. So do you think that's something that should worry Shazam and SoundHound?
Oh, maybe it will give them a little bit approach to be also open, I mean, it's music, it's metadata, and it should be available for everyone.
Yeah. And Stefan, what do you reckon? Should they be worried about this?
Yeah, the problem is that the metadata as a result of a recognition process could be delivered only to non-commercial applications, and that's And that's a problem because it's it will stay on the IP of Gracenote and all the other companies because it's very cost. Also, it's not very very cheap to handle all these servers and recognition farms. It's a very expensive business. Fraunhofer had this one of the first really impressive recognition technologies sold then in 2007 to a startup in Berlin, which is using this still. And there is another company here in the same building which is also releasing new applications based on a very, very stable mobile recognition. It's Bach technology. So there is not only SoundHound and Gracenote and others around. And I think the really, really important thing about Gracenote is that they maybe found another approach how they can deliver their data to free applications. But the question is how you could really use this in free application. It's not proved already, so I didn't read the non-commercial agreement by Gracenote.
Yeah.
I assume that there are some things you have to take care of before you're delivering metadata out of the Gracenote system to users.
Yeah.
So, and the biggest problem I have is our catalogs. So if we are going to discuss about the difference between Gracenote and Equinest, one of the examples of Equinest is that they are very, very weak in, for instance, German content, European content. Maybe Gracenote is better. That would be good for non-commercial applications. But one of the biggest problems also that some music styles are not represented in all these catalogs. So there was a PRS report last week, and they came out from the difference between Glastonbury Festival and an electronic music festival. So nearly 90% was reported correctly to the PRS, so everybody gets the money from the festival place. And from an electronic festival, more than 50% was not recognized.
Yeah.
And that's the problem because this electronic and other music styles are not represented in the databases. So as long as they are not represented in the databases, you can't recognize that. So you can't do a monitoring and you can't lead users to buy that stuff. That's the problem. And I don't know if they really all these commercial approaches from Equinest and Gracenote, for instance, can solve that problem in the future.
Yeah, and Ryan, talking about your students as well. You know, you've led a lot of projects.
Just a moment, Andrea, because I think Barbara wanted to say something.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
thank you, Ryan. Yeah, I just heard that Beatport is has closed up a deal with Shazam, which means this problem with electronic stuff. I mean, Beatport does not also have not everything because some stuff from indies which are available only on Bandcamp, for example, they are not on the big in the big stores.
Yeah.
But I think that the deal with Beatport could be close a little bit this lag. But I also see it. I totally agree on this. This is the problem.
That would be great.
Yeah, that would be great. And Ryan, looking at students, for example, and projects that they've done, of course, you know, we were saying earlier how the real success of the Gracenote program will come when developers have to take their project into a commercial realm and start making deals with a company that are sustainable for them. So have you come across any projects, for example, within this Mix Lab, where students got to a point where they could have taken a project into a commercial front, but had trouble actually making the deals to make that happen?
Well, as much as that would be possible, the situation we're in right now is that we do a lot of concepts or research, for example, in a business model for distribution, or we did something on marketing suites and stuff. So, and we're doing a lot of concepts, but we are still seeking partnerships with IT-focused universities. We're starting one right now with University of Mannheim, where the Pop Academy is located, around a sort of a universal buy and streaming button, which you can embed on websites, but also in third-party applications. So still have to see you know, if we can get to that point where students from us together with developers from other universities can form projects or businesses. But right now we're more in the conceptual
phase.
Yeah,
that's great. Cool. Well, let's move on to the next story, which was about the sort of positioning of album sales in the top 40 in the US. So there were a couple of posts, one by Mark Mulligan and one by Glenn Peoples from Billboard, talking about the way digital distribution has really changed the sales for the top 10 US albums and beyond into the top 40. So Mark Mulligan made a few interesting points, talking about how there was a 69% decline in top 10 sales between 2000 and 2012, and also talking about genre segmentation, where, you know, for example, adult contemporary is relatively safe, and it only dropped 30%, whilst pop, rock, and urban all fell 75% in the last 12 years. But the interesting thing is that Glenn Peoples took this idea further and looked at the top 40 instead of just the top 10. And what he found is quite interesting in the sense that there was actually a bigger drop in sales for albums that are below the top 10, so from 11 to 40 in a chart position, than in the top 10 itself. So that basically looking as if the very, very popular albums are remaining pretty popular, whilst the you know, the middle ground charts are actually losing ground to some of the smaller independent releases that are flooding the market, of course. So, Barbara, I wanted to start with you, just because you know, you were iTunes for quite some time. Do you think there is something to the idea that massive hits are remaining huge, whilst the middle ground is being somehow eroded by the quantity of releases that are on the market? And in that sense, whether there's a bit of an expansion in the catalog that has been purchased?
So here I think we really have to define it by genre. So the popular music, which also happens on TV in Germany, they are still CD buyers. I think there are around 80% buying physical products, which means they buy either a single bundle product with five tracks, or they buy the album anyway. So in this genre, it stays, I think, a long time. This is Germany.
Yeah.
But with all the niche, the other niche genres, I totally agree that here the people will buy only tracks, more tracks in the future.
Yeah.
If they don't like the album, they don't, you know, it's, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, sure.
Why should I buy, why should I spend 12, 15 euro if I only like one track? This time's all definitely over. But as I said, in the pop genre, this will stay.
Yeah, yeah, especially the German market, of course, is quite different from what's happening in the US. And Stefan, what do you think about, you know, the theory, you know, of course, so the theory of the long tail has been around for a few years now. So the idea that in theory, the fact that we have more and more releases means that more people are going to buy releases that are a little more obscure and go and find new stuff to listen to. Of course, there have been a lot of back and forths for this theory, of people saying that this is not true, that people really buy into the mainstream. But what I'm almost thinking right now is that it's not really about just the mainstream or just the long tail, and there's like a maybe a widening middle ground of releases that are not hugely popular, but they're not part of the millions and millions of tracks that are never bought on iTunes, that are there but are never bought. But that middle ground is actually becoming thicker, in the sense that those artists are managing to make more sales, even though maybe 10 years ago they would have made no sales at all. Would you think that's true?
Totally agree on this.
Yeah, I don't know if it's really that simple, because it's we are talking about music, and music is very emotional.
Yeah.
And one thing for sure is that the long tail, from my perspective, is a fairy tale. So you want to believe it, and that's why you say yes, maybe. And it's hard to say that in music, there is so much music already existing. And if you're not better or greater than that, then you will have a problem from the start. So it's not that you have to be good, you have to be extraordinarily good. Because if with the problem, or with the ability to have everything on your fingertips, which was produced for decades, then you can simply compare the original with maybe a lookalike from today, and that's why it's more critical to people or artists who would like to release this today, even if it's more coming out. So more and more music maybe will never be heard, by a lot of people in the future, simply yeah. by the fact that there's already that much existing.
Yeah.
And yes, of course, there will be some people in this area where they can live from music and they can sell some CDs. But I think the bigger opportunities is to be available also live and having a fan base which they really can count on. And
yeah.
if you don't have that fan base, you have maybe one track and then you're lost. And especially if you have the ability as a user that you can only buy one track and then you can buy the next track from the next artist. So
yep.
it's so easy to do this. And if you don't reach a certain level with your fans, then you won't last. And that's the problem. It was easier in the past. That's why I can understand musicians really well. But we are not able to put the wheels back to 20 years ago.
That's, yeah.
That won't happen.
And Ryan, on a first-hand experience, of course, working with a lot of artists from the academy, do you feel like they are finding it more difficult now that there's so much to be discovered, or do you have some encouraging words in terms of people that maybe have put a track out and have started being picked up? Not just by their fan base, but by a wider audience, thanks to what should be the advantage of the internet, really?
Well, what I see is, of course, it's very hard. A lot of artists, also here at the pop community, have problems, making their money or their first money. So they all go on tour and play concerts and try to sell their CDs. And a lot of them are actually disappointed with digital downloads, for example, or streaming. They don't make a lot of money with that. But in terms, of the possibilities they have, for example, in marketing their music, I think they, particularly here, they're doing good because they're, they get some education around that. And they are compared to maybe semi-professional artists, they are quite professional and they try to use that.
Yeah.
I wanted to say something about the long tail. I think that's
sure.
still an open question, whether that is only an idea or a concept, or if you will see, data, sales data in the future showing that it really can happen. I think it's still a big question of, and depends on recommendation and curation of music. So I am quite curious what Spotify will be doing in the future, and also what that will mean for other services. And for example, Daisy and the service Trent Reznor is willing to launch, because I think we aren't very far in that space, especially when it comes to getting new artists and new music into the market. Giving people the opportunity to find new music. I think the services right now aren't too good at that,
yeah.
especially in terms of newcomers. So I think there is potential there. But also, if you look at streaming, people in the past, they maybe bought 10 albums a year, and now they might not be listening to 10 artists, but maybe 200 artists in a year. So it will spread out to a lot of different artists. But what that
yeah.
means for the income and distribution of income, and if that will look like the long tail has promised, that's one big question.
Of course. And I was actually looking at I watched the live stream of the SF Music Tech Music Discovery panel last night. That was free to watch, and it was interesting actually to see how from the time that I moderated a panel on music discovery at South by Southwest last year to what they were saying this year, not a lot had changed. And of course, we are guilty as anyone in the tech industry to hope that technology is just going to happen and it's going to be, created, and it's going to be perfect. But, it is true that there's a huge amount of work to be done on the discovery front, and it's not something that's going to happen overnight. So again, like from last year to this year, there hasn't been a huge amount of progress, but there are a lot of companies working on this. So I'm hopeful that in the next 6 to 12 months, we're going to see something interesting coming out. All right. So I think I was going to talk about this Google story that came out a couple of days ago about how they are looking to squeeze piracy sites from the revenues by partnering with payment systems. But it does look like The Verge actually posted a counter story to that, whereby this is actually not true. So I'm not sure whether to discuss it or not. Just on a general level, I was wondering what's your opinion, Ryan, on what Google is doing in terms of SEO and maybe downgrading piracy sites, and whether you think they should and would be able to do more if they really wanted to. Because, you know, of course, they often have the music industry accusing them of not doing enough to prevent piracy or to restrict websites. But at the same time, there's a sort of a free speech argument and a sort of a internet neutrality argument where, you know, in theory, they shouldn't really be messing with the results too much, other than maybe, you know, making sites that are legal a little more prominent on the search engine. What's your take on this?
Well, I think if it's true, it will probably be some strategic move to, you know, to address that problem with the music industry that they think Google is not doing enough in that space, and especially as now they're working with labels in terms of Google Play. That's probably one part of their strategy, and that part, if it's true. And I think, yes, it's a good thing that startups or companies working with musical content try to work out a cooperation and partnership with the artists, the labels, and the creators. On the other hand, you could always ask questions like, the typical things like, where would YouTube be if they tried to reach a deal back when they started? And, they create some sort of pressure on the industry to come up with new models.
Yeah.
But generally, I think as, if you do a company and you you should know who you're working with, and I think they should, get together with artists and labels and pay them money. That's my first response to that.
Yeah, sure. And Barbara, I was just looking, for example, I just did a sample search looking at Lady Gaga Born This Way on Google, and there's no illegal sites on the first few pages of search, which means that the new system seems to be working on that front. At the same time, there doesn't seem to be any way to purchase the album directly. There's no links to iTunes or even Spotify until the end of the third page of results. So do you think there's a problem here in terms of the way that music platforms that sell music are exposed on Google?
Yeah, actually, to this topic, I don't know too much about it. I'm not sure. An SEO expert, and I know how to search, so So I don't know if iTunes could make a better SEO, or Google Play is waiting until they just started actually in Germany last year in November.
Yeah.
So not sure what Google's tactic is behind this.
Yeah. Stefan?
So if it goes to the words you have to buy, then it's very high value of big amount of money you have to pay if you're directly buying AdWords for artists.
Yeah.
You can do this as a company. And normally, if you don't have that much content on your website and you want to make an offer to people, then you often use for SEO marketing these artist words. But they're not cheap. And that's why we also prevented to use these artist words when I was at Orpio, because it's too expensive to use this. And I don't know if you as an artist really should use or a music service, if they would really use such artist keywords, they would have to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
So this money is spent on other websites, media companies, which want to drive simply customers to their website and say, we have something about Rihanna, and then you don't have something, you don't have the video, you don't have the music to buy, you simply have an information about Rihanna, and that drives customer to the website. That's the currency which drives the web market.
Yeah.
And so you're depending on the value of AdWords So they are not cheap and they are too expensive to be bought for buying reasons. That's, I think, a simple explanation. It's the market which drives the high price for artist keywords, for really for the top artists.
Yeah.
So maybe it looks different if you're going and search for a niche artist. Maybe that's something you maybe should try next.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, it's great. Thankfully, we had a short news section-ish. But I wanted to talk about a couple of the stories that we were looking at for Germany specifically. And of course, the one that most people are talking about, even though I bet you guys are probably sick to death of talking about it, is the YouTube and GEMA story, which has been really rumbling along for, I guess now it's a couple of years that these controversies, have, this dispute has started. So, Stefan, I want to start with you just because, you know, this whole thing started with a lawsuit, basically, and you know, the central problem between YouTube and GEMA is this ongoing lawsuit. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you know about it and sort of what is the key problem that is happening here?
I think, in general, the first existing contract between YouTube and Google was limited, I think, to the end of 2009.
Yeah.
And they started first conversations, and then they didn't find an agreement. That's why GEMA made a sample issue with 15 tracks, 15 or 16, something like that, sending simply a letter to YouTube and shut down these tracks because you are not willing to pay these tracks. And from that point, it started to become a really strange process. It's a fight between two big market participants who are following their own interests, and in the middle stands the user and the creative people. And now you have to dive into deeper into the process to find out what's really behind. The problem is that German users only see this, you can't watch this video because it's blocked by GEMA. And this is something which is definitely not true, because GEMA is not able to block a video on the video platform. It's definitely not true. So this is only a set which you can manage as an owner of an audio recording with the so-called content ID within the YouTube system. So I can say, if I own audio, I can set the content ID and say, if you recognize this music stuff from a user who is uploading content like this, please do this and this with that.
Yeah.
So you can say, please send ads, and I would like to have a revenue share of these ads. Or you can say, simply block this content. And this is something the labels are doing, because they are afraid of getting a lower share from the revenue, which is YouTube giving away from the ad income.
Yeah.
And on the other side, there is this... they are afraid of the tariff, that this tariff between GEMA and YouTube will be established by a lawsuit.
Yeah.
And then they would have to pay back all the money until the beginning of 2010, and that's a big fraud. And that's why better block videos and content from users than paying back money which you don't own at the moment. That's a very insecure situation. Both parties are communicating into their directions, and that's not good for users. It's not good for creatives, musicians, and for it brings a lot of unclear things into this process.
Yeah sure. Ryan, what's your take? I know that, you know, YouTube is universally known, you know, by, you know, everybody's talking about how, you know, they ask their kids, people, you know, that have kids that are between, you know, 10 and 20 years old, you know, what's the number one platform for consuming music? And of course, they say YouTube. And of course, you have a lot of students as well that you talk to. So what's your thoughts on the impact of this restriction on YouTube videos? Because of course, there are now a ton of videos, hundreds of thousands of videos that have been pulled.
I'm not sure if I understood you, of course, a lot of people know that problem, and to tell from our students, They know that they can't watch that and stuff, but I think most of them use things like, I think it's called ProxTube, where you just, you know, you can go around that blocking of the video. Was that your question?
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. It was, you know, if there is, you know, such an easy workaround, which of course, you know, students that are, you know, or anybody really that is minimally computer savvy can use, it kind of makes the whole issue even more problematic, because you think, you know, on the one side, it's really an issue of rates, and of course there's a disagreement there. On the other side, if the majority of people between 10 and 20 years old start to use proxies to access YouTube, then all the revenue that is driven from those YouTube videos is going to get attributed to US plays and not to German plays, which creates a big problem on that front. So do you feel like that's an issue that's going to only grow as long as this lawsuit keeps going on?
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's a big issue, and I think I read in an article that it's expected for the lawsuit to take at least one more year.
Yeah.
So and I don't see you know, YouTube is of course the main destination for our students, but also in Germany we do have things like Tape TV or other destinations, but not really mainstream adopted music video platforms. So it is a big problem, you know, for the users, but also financially for artists and labels, and for even more for the creators, because I do know labels that make money with YouTube videos here in Germany.
Absolutely.
Right. So, but of course, lots more labels and especially creators that have contracts with GEMA could make money with that. So I'm a bit worried that it's going to take, you know, a few more months or maybe even 1 or 2 years. And I hope, you know, they find some way to get together, maybe not only by a lawsuit, but, you know, with their negotiations.
Yeah, yeah. And Stefan was actually mentioning whilst we were talking via email in the last couple of days. On the one side, you know, you have YouTube casting a wider net than they maybe would if they were willing to take a risk, in the sense that they don't have a lot of information on which tracks actually have GEMA involved rights, so that's why they're taking down a lot more videos than maybe they should, because they're not sure whether GEMA is involved or not, and they don't want to run the risk of it being so. On the other side, of course, labels and artists that find their video have been taken down can go back to Google and say, look, I own 100% of this piece, I can prove it, I don't have any relationship with GEMA. And so they can get it pulled back on. But it's, of course, a laborious process, and I'm sure it's going to take a while, especially now that there's so much going on at the Google offices in Germany. So, Barbara, you were talking about how, you know, in your experience as well, you look at a lot of indie releases and indie labels, and you can't find any of them on YouTube. Do you think that they have the manpower to actually go back to Google and ask the company to put the tracks that have been taken down back online?
Actually, I don't know who has to do what to make this all convenient for the users, actually, because it's so, as Stefan already said, it's so mixed up, and the communication also from the GEMA itself is not best, actually.
Yeah.
How they represent themselves in the public is sometimes really funny. Yeah. And and this doesn't make the situation even better. So the one side is, I don't know what to do, actually. I really don't know. Sometimes when I find out, okay, Ninja Tune uploaded a video and shared it on Facebook and on Twitter, I can't look at it. I always tweet back and said, hey, couldn't you upload it also on Vimeo so that we poor Germans can also look at it.
Exactly. So that's
it. And I hardly ever share YouTube links. I only share links from SoundCloud or from Bandcamp. Because I have international friends everywhere. So
yeah.
Plus, I think most of the independent artists you're talking about, they probably are represented by the GEMA in Germany in some way. So and they depend on GEMA. So I don't think they could do anything right there, because YouTube could still be sued at some point by the GEMA by not blocking that content.
Yeah, of course. So it's a real mess, and it's actually, it's raising all sorts of different issues, actually, because it's not just the fact that you know, the videos of the actual song are being blocked, but there's also a lot of videos that would probably fall under what, in the US at least, you would call fair use, which is used for journalistic purposes or for, you know, for reporting on things, where the music is either in the background or there's a small clip or anything like that, that are being picked up by the YouTube system's fingerprinting software and that are being pulled down. An example that caused quite a bit of fuss in Germany was last week, the Meteorite videos, the dashboard videos that have now broken all records with hundreds of millions of views in just 3 or 4 days. That have mostly been pulled down from YouTube Germany because there were radios running in the cars whilst the videos were being recorded. And so the fingerprinting software picked up on tracks and it pulled the videos down, which of course it becomes a problem of you know, communicating news, which is a wider issue than just music. It's actually something that that's related to free speech and actually getting the news out there. So, Stefan, do you think that this is going to be something that creates a bit more political pressure? If you know, journalist representations, of course, get involved, and the issue escalates a little bit in a political way.
I don't know if it will become better from that point of view, because on the other side, Google is fighting against the whole publisher scene in the print business as well.
Yeah.
And the journalists are getting the money from their print houses, and I don't know if they are really also going to talk against or in a way like they should do this in this music case. So they will be in a very curious situation that they, on one hand, have to fight against the Google thing for publishers, and on the other thing, they have to fight for YouTube against GEMA. It's a very curious situation. And at least at the moment, I think the biggest music service of the world, which is YouTube, has a really, really big lobby. They exactly know how to communicate, how to spread news, so that GEMA rigs looks really ugly.
Yeah.
And so they are counting on that the GEMA will maybe will lose that fight. But I'm not sure, because they are also very ignorant. And they have a very strange communication, as Barbara said.
Yeah.
And I think they are both hardliners, and there will be no result in that way. So they have to go back to the table, and they have to really define what's the problem. And I think the biggest problem is on that table, there will be only lawyers sitting.
Yeah.
That's, I think, one of the biggest problems, because you can't talk about a product only with lawyers. In respect to lawyers, they're really good at getting the right stuff for you if you have a problem. But if you're talking about that, you can't talk only with lawyers. But
yeah,
you have to talk with the guys who are doing the product and have a vision what will be the product, because GEMA is also a product for all the writers, artists, and publishers, what you want to achieve with that. And that's a situation they have to solve both on a round table, with maybe not only lawyers.
Sure.
But just one very important thing I want to throw in, and this I already said in our really cool email conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, great input. That was great.
Stefan as well, is that the GEMA, they represent not all artists in Germany. So they only represent a part, and which is around, I don't know, 40,000, or is it 50,000? So it's just a little bit. I mean, of course, they have all the major labels and major artists, but it's not everything.
Yeah.
And this is also a very important point when you think about the whole issue.
Sure. Of course, and you were mentioning the C3S project, which is an interesting new project that has been put forward last year to build a new type of performing rights society, which would create, which I think will be pan-European possibly, but you know, it's based in Germany right now, and it would accept artists that do want to release their music under Creative Commons, but that also want to release the music commercially on separate channels. So it means that you don't have to make the hard choice of whether you want to be with GEMA and not have music released under Creative Commons, or whether you want to, you know, you want to just release your music without making any money. So it's kind of, it's a really great project. Do you think it's got the chance of actually becoming a reality in the near future? Barbara?
So the first thing to think about is that in the moment they start, the GEMA will lose its monopoly game. And this would be a win situation for all artists.
Yeah.
So. And all the other things, it is very complicated also with the Creative Commons licenses and everything. And how do you want to collect? You need a huge amount of things behind you for this.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the first goal would really be to that GEMA will lose its monopoly in Germany. And then we can go step ahead. This is how I feel. I'm fighting for more than 10 years about the same topic, and I'm, you know, I really don't know. It's
of course.
But also mentioned a really interesting point,
sure.
Stefan. So if the fight or the lawsuit in German, we really come to an end, this will be also discussed in England, in France, and in other countries, of course. So let's see, and let's hope. And meanwhile,
fingers crossed.
We still love music.
We'll see what happens. Ryan, have you heard of this C3S project, and what do you think of it?
Yeah, we had them at our Future Music Camp last year, and I believe they're coming this year as well. It's a very interesting project, but I think the challenge is really in monetizing the licenses.
Yeah.
Because right now, as an artist. Even if you're quite small, if you're getting professional and going on tour, and so if you actually have to go to GEMA because you just get the, you know, really important money for you, and the C3S is planning to use modern technology in different spaces, you know, to monitor online broadcasts, playlist use and other online channels. But as you said before, just putting technology out there or trying to use it doesn't mean anything really. And we'll have to, you know, have to see if it, first of all, if it really works, if everything goes good with metadata and you know, distributing the money, and who knows what problems will come up, you know, while trying to do that. So it will really be interesting to see if artists make money through that new. Organization and how much it will be, and at what point artists really have a financial existential motivation to switch or maybe just to try out.
Yeah, of course. Okay, I just wanted to do a quick round across the panel just to talk about streaming services in Germany. So the last time I was at the Future Music Camp conference 2 years ago, so Simfy was still the only pretty much streaming service in Germany. Now we got Spotify, RDO, and Deezer all in the same market. So I just wanted to get a quick round from you guys, starting with Ryan, maybe on you know, which service have you chosen to use, if you use any of them, and how do you feel they rank in Germany in terms of popularity?
Well, I do have some years of streaming history now, personally. So I did start with Napster a few years ago, and I switched to Simfy because, you know, they were they started off here in Mannheim before they moved to Cologne.
Yeah.
And I used that service, and then when Spotify came, I switched because the product in my eyes was just better. and the Simfa had some technology problems back then.
Yeah.
So right now I'm using Spotify. I did try Deezer for just short, but I haven't tried all of them. So
yeah.
Right now I'm doing it with Spotify. I don't know any numbers, so if anybody knows numbers on what streaming service is the most popular in Germany, it would be great to hear that, because you would assume maybe Spotify, because that's the service most people are talking about.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that's true. Man.
Yeah.
You know, especially compared with other services bundled with mobile providers or hardware, which we have been having here for some years in Germany. I don't know if they are bigger than Spotify still at this point.
Sure. And Barbara, do you use any of these? And what's your general feeling when you talk to people about the various options that are available right now?
So I'm a Spotify user since a long time. So I had luck to get in before they really started here. And actually, I am a little bit disappointed because I think they could have done more. So in terms of apps, you know, they are the apps are just, yeah, I'm really trying them to make them mine. But as you know, I'm totally into the music recommendation thing, human vs. Technique, and Spotify just can't beat human recommendations still. So I don't know why it happened. I also checked out Simfy. But at the time I checked it out, the catalog was not really cool. So I went back to Spotify. The other thing I don't like on Spotify is a political thing, and it's because of the net neutrality discussion.
Yes, that was something that really interested me as well.
Yeah. So this is also a thing we have to be careful about it, you know, because it's opening the or closing down the net neutrality discussion through the back door, and we have to watch out for this.
And that's, of course, just for those who don't know about it, I think you're referring to the fact that they have made a deal with Deutsche Telekom, whereby you can buy a Deutsche Telekom mobile subscription which bundles in Spotify, and that means that the bandwidth that you use to consume music on Spotify does not count against your data cap, which means that, of course, Spotify is has a huge competitive advantage with services like Radio or Simfy when it comes to choosing the service you're going to use. Because, of course, if you're on Deutsche Telekom, you think, well, if I have to spend the same amount of money but I don't get the data counted towards my plan, I'm going to, of course, go for Spotify. And that's something that I pointed out, actually, last year as soon as I heard that this deal had been made. It's definitely a good point.
So I'm not using Spotify so much these days, but I'm using heavily Bandcamp, for example.
Yeah.
You can also stream this, so it's also kind of a streaming service, and SoundCloud. But this is niche product, but we still have to check out what's going on with them within the next years. It's very interesting.
And Stefan, of course, very interested in your opinion, because you worked with Opio, which was more radio-oriented, I guess, than just a pure on-demand streaming, but of course working in that space. And you've seen how things have changed over the last 3 or 4 years in Germany and more services coming into the market. What's your take on you know, the various services, and how do you feel about the current kind of competition and war that's going on?
First of all, there will be, just like in other areas, the winner takes it all. So there will be one Amazon, one Google, and there will be maybe one Spotify, even if you're not that satisfied with Spotify.
Yeah.
I'm also a Spotify user, but the market, I think, in Germany is different to other areas. It's quite interesting. I don't have the exact numbers, but my conversations within the last weeks showed me that... for instance, Napster still have the most subscribers in Germany.
Yeah.
And year's data.
That's very interesting.
So this comes from the longer history, and they are concentrated on people who really would like maybe to spend money on music service, and they have a longer history. So Spotify is not the biggest market leader here in Germany. And I think compared to Simfy, it's not quite sure if Spotify have less users than Simfy or not. I think they are quite at the same level at the moment. One thing Barbara said is of course, one of the most important things. All these services are missing. This is the type of recommendation. And that's why I'm partly use, of course, Orpio, because then I get with a simple click. Some things I really maybe don't have listened before, and it's very related, and it's a lot of curated and stuff. And of course, there is Fraunhofer technology inside. So we're working in that field, so I exactly know what these companies and these technologies can bring. And yes, there is a lot of space for the future to do good things. Definitely, and this won't be an approach which is only based on a type of technology. This will be a combined approach, for sure. Yeah, that's why still using Spotify, because it's from my perspective, user handling and all that kind of stuff. It's okay. The catalog, it's okay, and all the other things I'm trying out from time to time.
Yeah,
and the biggest thing is really how they can make a step forward with better discovery and recommendation, because this will drive maybe more users. Because at the moment, even if they maybe don't want to hear this, it's still a niche market. So everybody's talking about streaming service, but
of course,
it's a niche market at the moment. It's not the water coming out of the tap in every flat.
Yeah, yeah, but sure. Yes. Of course. And I just wanted to end by talking about the startup scene in Germany and talking about the music startups that have come out of there. Of course, you know, this, the shining star of German music startups is SoundCloud, which is now sort of moving from being a startup to being, you know, a very established and large company. So just a quick round on how do you guys feel about SoundCloud and its growth really over the past 3 or 4 years? Ryan?
Well, an exceptional story, of course, with SoundCloud, even though I always found it quite hard to explain why you really need SoundCloud. And but at the moment, we have most of our students, or I would guess like half of our students have picked that up, especially people in the electronic music scene. I heard from them a time ago that they're trying to position themselves as a service provider for labels, so I hope that is going well, and I'm keen on seeing stuff happening there.
Yeah,
great company. We're trying to get Nick from SoundCloud over in April at the camp, so I hope they'll be showcasing some new things they're planning or they're doing right now here for the people that come to the camp.
Great. Awesome. Barbara?
SoundCloud, I'm a heavy SoundCloud user since they arrived in Berlin. Let's see what will happen. Right now they focus to be on the YouTube for audio, which means not only music anymore. And I'm not a big fan of the next SoundCloud because the discovery has somehow gone. I don't know. Let's see. Right now, I see more Bandcamp is becoming the next SoundCloud because they added the new fan feature, so you can follow. They have to add a lot of other features, but the one and only reason to go to Bandcamp is really you can monetize your content directly.
Yeah.
And so we will see. It's going to be very interesting, but of course everybody loves SoundCloud.
Of course.
There might be interesting battles between SoundCloud and GEMA, for example, if they get bigger, because that's one problem that a lot of artists talk about. You know, what do we do with GEMA? Do they pay? Or do I have to pay? And, you know, SoundCloud was very maybe intelligent, saying, you know, it's part of, the artists have to do that themselves. But if they really get popular and more popular in Germany, that will be... Of course, one point to talk about.
Yeah, sure. And Stefan, I'll pass the question on to you. And also, if you want to add, if there's any company, new startup in Germany that you're excited about on the music front, just if you can mention that, that'd be great.
Yeah, and this will also be my last note for today, because then I have to leave to go to the train, to be back in Berlin at the right time. Yeah, of course, I'm also a SoundCloud user. I'm using this for my band and getting in contact with other people who are also producing. A more interesting aspect is the kind of technology they are using in case of recommendation, as Barbara mentioned. That's really, I think, not to say it's crappy, but it's really a bad experience. Even if you're looking for other stuff than music, it becomes also very, very difficult. So yeah, there's a lot of improvement or room for improvement there also in the next SoundCloud. Hope to see some more things for at the Future Music Camp or at South by Southwest, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't have an answer for a new cool startup in Berlin. I don't have it at the moment.
Great. So awesome.
I would leave the discussion maybe to next time, or if we see us or Ryan or Barbara personally. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. And I'll post your links to your company as well on the show notes so that people can find out about more about it. Thanks so much for coming on. And I'll talk to you soon.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye, Stefan.
Bye.
Okay, great. So I just wanted to end the show by asking you guys as well if you have any new or not so new startup from Germany that you're particularly excited about right now, that's around or that's developing, or if you've heard about anything along those lines.
It is actually quite funny this year because I am having problems finding new companies that came up this year or last year since the last camp, since May, and I'm asking around a lot because I as Stefan said, I don't see the new music startup right now. We wrote about Vava and Sensari in our emails and.
Yeah.
They're not available in Germany right now, and I'm not too much into their plans, but it sounds very interesting. They're, for example, doing something with their a new recommendation engine, AMP3. So that will, I think, be interesting to see what they're coming up with. What I would like to see would be a German company in the music analytics recommendation area doing things with Echonest or now with Gracenote Open Platform. To find a way to push German newcomer artists and do interesting things there, because I don't see a German startup really active in that point. Maybe there's somebody I don't know of, but that would be something I'd be really interested in.
Yeah, of course, because you've got companies like Music Brains and you have Next Big Sound and Music Metric that are all operating on different verticals of the analytics space, but they're all based in either the UK or the US. So. Yeah. Barbara, anything from you?
No, unfortunately, I only can quote a tweet I sent out yesterday when I was trying to find innovative music startups in Germany. It's just all about, they're all talking about GEMA and YouTube, and it's just boring and it's depressing.
And so I guess it's actually interesting, just because in a sense you could think that companies that, of course, not companies that are working on analytics because they're free from constraints that are to do with rights, but of course if I was a startup in Germany and I wanted to work in the music space with rights implications and licensing implications, I would be terrified right now, just because it just looks like such a complicated and in a way hostile environment to start operating in at the moment as a new company. Of course, we've seen Deezer and Spotify and Audio launching, but they are already fairly established service and services with a straightforward business model. So I would be just terrified if I was a new startup with a new business model and some new ideas to actually try and face organizations like GEMA to try and convince them that this is something worth looking at.
Yeah.
What I would think would be great, to start a company here from Germany with no, with little financial, with little money, and you would try to get the rights. I think that's very risky.
Yeah.
So for already more established companies, for international companies from UK or the US. Sorry.
That's right.
If they are planning, or if that would be an option to open an office or some kind of research lab for the German market, to find German partners to do projects with universities, with developers. I think that's a great space where I'm not seeing too much happening. So if anybody sees the show and is planning maybe to do a office in Berlin or somewhere else in Germany, and to work with students, with IT programming students, but also with, Pop Academy is really a great place for finding people interested in the music business and having a great education in that space. So I would be happy to hear or to grab some possibilities in that space.
That's great. That's great. And on that note, I was actually going to end the show and thank you guys. So on Ryan's part, I wanted to plug futuremusiccamp.com, which is an event happening in April. So if anybody of you is interested and is local to Germany, perhaps go and check out futuremusiccamp.com and keep up to date with what's happening there. And also you can check out smix.com, which is the Smix Labs website, which is the technology-oriented project that Ryan and Daniel are carrying out over at the Pop Academy. Is that everything, I think? Did I catch everything?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
That's great. Barbara, anything to plug your end?
No, not really. I mean, we are planning to do this panel for the Republika in May, and
yes,
I hope to have you on board.
Hopefully, yeah.
But this is not fixed, so we can just assume it's going to happen.
Yeah, fingers crossed. That's great. Well, thanks so much for listening as well. Digital Music Trends is a weekly show. I've also started a new one-to-one show, which is going to be covering music startups, digital marketing experts, and so on. It's just going to be one-to-one interviews happening every week or every 2 weeks. It's not going to be fixed yet, but you can find that on digitalmusictrends.com and on YouTube and SoundCloud. Thanks so much for listening again. Have a great week, and until next time.